Watch this.
Hello and welcome back to an episode of the Quick Jog Off podcast brought to you in partnership with Bruce.
But Joy.
Yes, correct. Thank you very much. I'm Tom Mills and today I'm joined by Bruce Fitzpatrick.
Good evening.
And Sam Williams.
Greetings, gentlemen. Gentlemen, side note, do not let grass and debris collect on the bottom of your golf shoes and then not scrape it off. Because then when you come to try and get it off the bottoms of your golf shoes, when it's caked on, it's not an enjoyable task. I've just spent half an hour at the kitchen sink at my premises, absolutely grinding away on them.
I mean, there's a couple of bits to go out there. First off, who washes their shoes in the kitchen sink? I mean, from a personal hygiene standpoint, I take issue with that. And second, why are you cleaning them on a Monday evening and you're not just using the, you know, pressurized air or just a damp towel after your round? What's going on here? Are you trying to impress someone tomorrow?
I was so wet at fourth call. I just didn't have, after 36 holes getting another soak in, I just did not have it in me to go and try and seek out the air dryer or whatever the hell. What do you call them? The little air hose? I don't even know what it's
pressurized
called.
Air.
The shoe cleaner. There you go. Yeah, I didn't know it in me.
Played on Saturday and changed my shoes and then used the pressurized air thing. That was a mistake. It was like, I should have been wearing goggles.
And then, yeah, it goes all over you because you're holding them, aren't you?
And yeah. Anyway. Yeah, that wasn't ideal.
Pressing matters to discuss.
Yeah, I can't say this is the most pressing thing we've got to do on a Monday post the Masters. Just before we ran on to roll, Bruce said he was sad. And I wondered where he was going. But I'm sad, Bruce, that it's going to be another 362 days till I get to use the Masters app again.
I'm going to put it out there. I actually haven't used the Masters app quite some time. Yeah, I know. Everyone talks about how brilliant it is, which I don't doubt. I'm just a bit of a Luddite and haven't been using it. But
absolutely majestic stuff.
I think what allows them to do it is I saw something. They basically give away so much of their TV rights, don't they? So whilst their TV rights are worth fortunes, they give away a stack of it, which I think part of that goes into the app and everything like that to display all the shots and all the coverage. It is an unbelievable resource. Like, so good. I was up at 5 a.m. this morning driving up north and I was absolutely shagged. And once Scheffler was like four shots clear going into the Amen corner, it's like, that is it. I need bed now. I've read this book before. I know how it ends. And then I got up in the morning and just cantered through the last few holes while I was just sort of getting ready to leave the house.
I thought you were going to say, had it on the dashboard while I was driving.
While I was doing 90, yeah. So at what point did you call it a day? What hole for Scheffler?
I think he shot into 12. I think by then, Aberg had tugged one left, Morikawa had tugged one left, Homer was long, wasn't he, on 12. It had all unraveled, and I thought, do you know what? He's probably seen out the worst stretch of ball striking we're going to see from him all year for nine holes, and he's somehow still leading this tournament. Like, there's no way he can lose.
Did you make it all the way through, Bruce?
I did, yeah. I watched the whole way through. And then went to bed pretty sharpish. So I didn't do the whole presentation and the ceremony and whatnot. What about you, Mills?
I called it a day after he stuffed it on 14 because Oberg had birdied 14. I thought, okay, he's got a chance. And then he absolutely stuffed it to about 6 inches, didn't he? I thought, right, I'm done. That was probably about, I don't know, half 11 maybe. And I thought, no, that's it for me. This is done. Because it is such
quiet.
A shame that it became, I mean, it's just the dominance of Scheffler really, wasn't it? But it just became I've seen it. I've read it.
In some ways, though, it's quite enjoyable, isn't it? To actually start, I was really rooting for him. It's so impressive.
Yeah, and I just thought it's pretty inspiring stuff, watching him go about it. And I've got to say, Oberg as well, which I've clarified this week, that is close to the correct pronunciation than Aberg, as I was calling him last year at the Ryder Cup. So sorry about that, Ludwig. Oberg, I mean, just really impressive as well. Like, first start in a major to put in that kind of performance. Yeah, I know he kind of overcooked his shot into 11, made double there, but I mean, he just looked like a seasoned pro. I thought it was brilliant. Yeah, I stayed up the whole way to the end, even though I knew bit of a foregone conclusion. I think it's the one event I would stay up late and jeopardize my productivity at work the next morning for, because it's just inspiring.
I think what was the most impressive bit of the tournament in terms of just zoning in on Scheffler's bit performance for a minute? What was the most impressive part for you boys?
I think for me, I wouldn't say it's actually Scheffler. I think watching that Friday, the second round, was some of the most enjoyable golf I've watched in living memory, because it was blowing an absolute hoolie. And I mean, the command of the ball in those conditions was genuinely breathtaking. It was, you know, it's the type of stuff you want to see at the Open, but we haven't seen the wind properly blow at the Open for like 20 years, really, you know, probably going back to,
I thought Scheffler's control of the ball is probably what's worth separating there, though. I mean, I think there's a shot he hit into 11. McIlroy just threw one way up in the air and the wind just like nailed it and pushed it into the water. I think it was on Friday.
It was Friday, yeah.
And Scheffler just hit a much more sort of artistic, creative shot. Didn't get affected in the same way. And he seems to just do that the whole time. And we hear so much now in golf about, treating it like a game of poker, playing the same shape, doing things in a very repetitive way. And to see someone with some like artistic and creative flair in total command of his ball flight, going on and continuing to just build a lead in those kind of conditions, I thought was amazing. And his composure as well. You know, he just airmailed the green on 10, I think, on Saturday. Hit one that looked like it was all over the flag. Surprised that he took on that back pin. Obviously, dead is, if you go long, it's pretty dead. He chipped one up, hit a really good lag putt that looked like it was going to go in, and then stepped up and missed a 2.5-footer, made double. And you thought, oh, this is quite interesting. And then three holes later, he goes and makes an eagle. I just thought that bounce back ability, very, very impressive.
It was the composure for me. Like, I don't think my short game would have stood up to the strain of those first four holes yesterday. But I mean, I don't think anyone's could have really. I mean, he really didn't. I mean, I'm sure there's better dissections of, different elements of strokes gained and how he performed throughout the week. But his iron play was, a little bit off the mark from maybe vintage Scheffler that we're used to seeing over the last couple of months. His first shot into the first, that was short. That was a tough up and down, grounded out, great up and down on two. Like, I mean, it wasn't a great start down two. He'd been unlucky, caught that bunker. Then he sent his third shot long. Again, it's a really tricky up and down. Makes an unbelievable up and down on three for birdie and didn't quite make one on four. And you think, Christ, so many other golfers there would have buckled and not played their way out of the tournament, but would have let a lot of people back into it. And I thought the amazing thing was he was still going strong in the lead, and he just looked so composed. It was like, it doesn't matter. We just move on. We just carry on and keep putting one foot in front of the other. I thought it was genuinely remarkable stuff to see. And I don't know, but I don't know, maybe we kind of het up in this world of, maybe we're getting a bit hyperbolic on this just because he's in an unbelievable vein of form, but it feels like he is the most dominant player for the last two or three years now, really.
I think
without a doubt.
It looks like he's never going to, you think back to all the sort of recent world number ones, and even going back to Tiger, it's like they all had something in the locker where they could lose it off the tee, where like Scheffler just, it's almost boring to watch him off the tee because it's 2 yards a draw or 2 yards a fade. It's usually fade, isn't it, for him? But it's like, he's never going to lose it. So it's like, okay, he's down the middle and his iron play is just sublime. And the thing that really shocked me this week, and it shocked me, now he's working with Phil Kenyon, but his short game was, I've never really watched Scheffler before and thought his short game was like of another order. But this week was just mind-blowing short game, I thought.
I think his chipping's always been really good. You know, when he was facing off with Cam Smith a couple of years ago, when he won his first green jacket, he chipped in on three, and he's always had, I think, fantastic hands around the green. The only question mark has been his putting. And yeah, he still misses the odd short one, but he makes it up with a fair few long ones that he holds as well, like made a great one across the green for eagle on on Saturday. Really good two putt from length on Sunday on the same hole for birdie. You know, he is kind of like the full package. And yeah, he's a bit streaky with the putter, but if you can drive it long and straight, hit your irons as close as he does, and then if you do have a slightly bad day, you chip it dead. There's not really much of a weakness there.
What's your guy's take on this all this chat that if his wife Meredith went into labour, he's going to walk off the course? I was a bit, I don't know.
I don't think he's doing it for the headlines. He doesn't strike me. Bruce talked about this a couple of weeks ago, didn't he? And it's like, I don't think this is like a headline grabbing thing. Like, I mean, would he have come off on the 14th? I think that's probably a stretch. Would someone have told him on the 14th? I don't think they would have either. But I do get the sense that like he's a pretty sincere guy. I think that's just like, it's remarkable when you watch him, just how it's not the composure on the course. It's the, you know, he's very, very just humble and down to earth. I heard someone say that maybe, I think, in fact, Luke might have said to me in the car today, he was like, he's almost like a likable version of DJ in his prime.
I can't get on board with that.
You can't get on board with that.
Well, what's the comparison? They both fade the
ball. He was just so dominating and so assured in his own abilities, wasn't he? When DJ was absolutely flying high. But I just think Scheffler's exceptionally likable.
Yeah, I also think the comparison there is off in that Scheffler has been more dominant than DJ ever has. I put that out there. I'd say, you know, to circle back on what we were talking about earlier, I can think of Rory having a really dominant patch in 2014. Spieth had a really dominant patch in 2015. Kepka's been dominant in smaller patches in the majors. But no one does it for more than a season, really, until Scheffler. If we leave Tiger out of it, because he's a separate conversation, totally unprecedented what he's done. And so many people have been unfairly compared to Tiger. You know, Jason Day at one point, Rory, Morikawa, but none of them have done it for two or three seasons, which is what Scheffler in the midst of.
Do we think Scheffler's done it for two seasons? Oh, yes, he won the Masters 2 years ago, but he didn't win anything in 2013, major-wise. And then, yes, he's been very dominant this year, extremely dominant this year. But I kind of feel like there's been more hype in the last sort of 4 or 5 months than there was maybe 18 months ago.
It's the top tens, though, isn't it, on tour and stuff. Like, I think there's a stat, he's literally finished, he's had like one event in the last 3 years where he's finished outside the top 25 or something absurd like that. I mean, he's not had an over par round in 2024. He's not shot over par once.
He's won four of his last five starts, and the other one he came second in. And he was just so dominant last year as well. Okay, he didn't notch the same number of wins, but in terms of the sustained level of ball striking and just turning in performances, it is a completely different order to what McIlroy or Spieth have done. And I can think of them as the only real comparisons. Jason Day, maybe he's in that conversation as well, but it's different.
That's This is supposed to be pithy, short and sharp. So that's the first 20 minutes sorted. We've got 20 minutes left. What threads do we want to tug? Who do we want to talk about? I'd quite like at some point to talk about Danny Willett.
Okay, yeah. Lead the charge there.
We'll kick it off.
I thought Danny Willett, you know, coming 6 months off the back of a shoulder surgery, was supposed to be out for a year, race back for the Masters. I thought he played very, very well. And what's interesting is Danny Willett's attitude is often something I'm not fully on board with, but he seemed to just be absolutely loving it, taking the highs with the lows, and didn't seem to lose the plot when he kind of fell off the wagon in rounds 3 and 4. But look, round 1 and 2, he was brilliant. I thought he was very, very good. Good to see Danny Willett.
Incredible recovery, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought it was really good.
Flies the flag well for England. Damn sight better than Tyrrell Hatton, I'd say.
I don't know about that.
Oh, Hatton's charge. There was a few takes. It was spitting, temper. I mean, Michael Verity, who's been on the podcast before, who had the most wonderful tweet, says, you know, Woods really can't get a break. after playing his heart out for 36 holes, he now gets to spend 5 hours with Tyrrell Hatton.
Well, on that note, yeah, I mean, Hatton, yeah, take it or leave it. It's a pretty impressive run he had going on Sunday. But as for Tiger, that is something that definitely needs some examination because I don't know about you guys. I was just in awe. I was just in absolute awe of the guy. When everyone was going out shooting millions on Friday afternoon, the fact that he managed to grind that out in the shape he's in, I mean, he looks just totally battered, doesn't he? The whole time. You know, his body, you can just see his body just will not cooperate. He looks like he's on countless medication, like different types of medication to try and manage the pain or get him in a fit state to play. And then he comes off the course and really you can see how much pain he's in. He's struggling to put a sentence together and yet the sort of shots that he can still hit. And the fact that he's gone and what is it, 24 cuts, setting a new record there, 24 straight cuts. It's just absurd. I just think the guy is completely, as kind of complimentary as he's been about Scheffler and what he's doing is it's absolutely fantastic run. Tiger, just a completely different league of his own. And I think this week was like another reminder of it.
I'm going to push back a little bit, not with the sentiment because the sentiment's correct, but do we not feel that it's a time now? Like you keep hearing Butch Harmon, who obviously worked with him very, very closely. He keeps talking about Tiger's only turned up to win. He's not turned up to make up the numbers. He's not turned up because it's the Masters. He turns up because he wants to win. He said this, you know, he's going to play the four majors and that's pretty much it. You know, maybe he'll do a couple after that. Six in a year, I think, is what he said is the maximum he'll do. He is incapable of playing four rounds. I mean, has been for a while. Looks like he's going to be for a while. I mean, at what point does he not think, you know, it is miraculous to see what he can do, but he is in agony. And at what point does he think, yeah, this is just a bit daft, isn't it?
I think it's more on us that. I don't think that's on Tiger or the event. I think it's more on the punters watching it because we're not jumping on this pod and riding VJ for playing four rounds, are we? Or whatever, you know, or Olathabal. You know, the issue is it's really hard to let go of expecting him to pull out something absolutely miraculous. And to Bruce's point, you know, making the cut was absolutely miraculous, but it is tougher, isn't it? Watching Tiger come off the course on Sunday, literally drenched in sweat. I mean, he was pouring in sweat, wasn't he? Do you see that interview? It was like a 30-second interview. He didn't look good. And it's quite tough to watch that. And it's kind of sad. But at the same rate, he's his own man. And, you know, I don't think anyone's going to go into the commentary booth and saying Tiger's turning up and he's playing for second place here. Like, they're always going to say he's playing to win because that's the type of guy he is ultimately. But it's very hard, I think, it's more on us letting go of the expectation. Like, there's plenty of guys that are turning up and playing that event. And the fact that he could still string it together at, what was he, one over or something through 36 holes with the conditions he was facing into it was mind-bendingly good.
I think, I totally echo that sentiment, Sammy. I think of everyone out there who's, you know, entitled to go out and play a tournament that people might feel like they have no chance of winning, he's earned the right more than anyone. Given,
oh yeah, I'm not saying
he's done for the
either.
Game. And I think there was a comment like a few years ago. I want to say I might get my facts mixed up here, but I think it was Faldo playing at the Open in maybe 2010 or 2015 when he was long past it. And I remember there was a bit of a Twitter storm about it at the time where someone had said, "What's he doing? Like playing in the Open Championship?" When he's taking that chance away from a great young pro who could go and, you know, earn a lot of money and lock up a card and the rest of it. And Faldo's won the Open three times. You know, he's won at St. Andrews. I think he has every right to go and do that. And I think in Tiger's case, it's like, yeah, we might all be thinking he's got no chance of winning, but I don't know about you guys. I think so many people out there still derive a huge amount of enjoyment and pleasure from just seeing him hit shots. It's like that first tee shot he hit. You know, there's the great little image of him hitting that little squeezer fade and the ball's like apexing. It hasn't actually come down yet and he's already going for the tee and everyone's just loving it on social media. And then he goes and hits a similar shot in and rolls in the putt for birdie, and everyone's like, here we go, it's on. And like, yeah, you know, those moments, even though they're fleeting, I just think they're absolutely brilliant. And
I'm not saying that, and I equally enjoy watching those things. I'm thinking more from his point of view, you know, when is he going to think, because he is highly competitive and he's not going to want to turn up to be the honorary starter, you know, that's not where he's at. So, you know, when is he going to think, or is he going to think, yeah, like, I don't really have a chance here, so let's call it a day. Do you think he's got that in him?
I think that's softened a bit. I don't know about you. I think it's like he used to say, well, when I feel like I can't win, I'm going to hang the gloves up, fighting talk sort of stuff. I think in this year, he gave a press conference where he's like, I just love the game. I just love playing golf. And I get the sense that maybe that's softened a bit. Maybe he does just love being able to go out there and maybe recapture some former glory and just, you know, be on truly hallowed turf that so few people get the chance, get the privilege to go and play at the Masters. I don't know. That's my take.
Minor segue on expectation, gents. Does it feel like with the, I don't know, just like all of a sudden Scheffler feeling like he's a bit more sharper in focus to the spectator this year going in, it's somewhat pulled away a little bit from Rory and the Grand Slam. That didn't feel like a storyline really at any point this week. Not because he wasn't really out of the tournament, wasn't really in the tournament, but it felt like that expectation of Rory's going to do it this year. It was like everyone had worn themselves out on it now for the last 6 or 7 years, that to the point where actually I kind of felt like he didn't feel like he was as front of mind.
I think it's because he's not on a streak. You know, he's not been playing particularly well. He's had like emergency surgery with Butch. I think if he was
triage,
then it might be, you know, it might be, oh yeah, this could be a thing. But I don't think anyone was really expecting it, were they?
Yeah, there was a comment in the press conference that got a bit of traction about someone asked Tiger, "Do you think Rory's going to do the Grand Slam?" And he obviously gave a ringing endorsement.
He's not going to say no. He's not going to be like, nah, he's one of my best mates, but nah, he's not going to.
But he could, no, but he could have couched it. He could have couched it a bit more in what I would have said is more typical Tiger language and said, well, he's got all the talent, he's plenty good enough, but this game's a crazy game. And, you know, there's plenty of other brilliant people who've just not quite managed to get it done. I think Rory's got a, you know, really strong chance of doing it, but, you know, you just need a bit of luck, or there could have been something a little less. Absolutely 100%. I almost think like it puts more pressure on McIlroy to say, you know, to say, oh, he's definitely going to do it. Like, I know they're friends and whatnot, but I thought of all people, Tiger might be a bit more measured on that.
I kind of feel like with Rory, watching Rory is like, it's like going out and on your Saturday medal and, you know, everyone on this who listens to this podcast by now knows I'm not very good at golf, but it's going out on your Saturday medal and expecting to break par. Like, that's, you know, I'm convinced myself I'm going to break par today. And you go out there and you shoot 95. Like, I get that same level of disappointment when I watch Rory though. It's like, I'm just expecting so much. The expectation levels are so high. And then I'm always like disappointed, but disappointed in a way that I felt before. It's like, yeah, okay, that was quite likely to happen, wasn't it?
There were some surprises though, weren't there? I don't think, you know, Bryson didn't feel like he was carrying a stack of form into that. Maybe that's wider than Mark. Maybe he has all of a sudden played lights out recently on Liv, and I'm going to be completely wrong on that. But like Bryson's performance was like, whoa, where did this come from?
You know, he's great on day one, wasn't he?
Even people like Højgaard to go. You know, some of these were like fairly surprising performances. Like, there's nothing stopping people from catching fire a little bit in the week. I mean, I feel like we should probably go through a few of the sort of, you know, the close runs that were in there. You know, people like Homer, it was just like, it's just another incredible display of ball striking. Like, again, just that guy's sneaky good. It was such a passing mention to Oberg, but like, that was such an unbelievable performance.
Yeah, so I woke up to £200 thanks to Homer, and it would have been so much more if he'd have just came solo third or B one. I had him at like 111.
You put money.
He didn't have loads of. He did not have loads of form coming into it.
Yeah.
which is an interesting one. You know, he obviously had the last couple of years, his form in the regular events was trending, but he had a pretty woeful record at May. All of a sudden, started to improve things at Hoylake, and then kind of sort of have a pretty pedestrian start to the year. To turn in a performance like that, you know, being in the lead and having a share of the lead and being in a really good spot heading into Sunday, just didn't really make any putts. As you say, Sam, it was a pretty impressive display of ball striking. And I thought he got terribly unlucky on 12.
Yeah.
You know, one hopping it into the bund.
On Saturday, you know, he went without a birdie. I mean, considering how well he hit the ball. And he did, like, he was up there on strokes gained approach pretty much all week. And he didn't get a birdie on that third round. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, the nice story there with him was he's just, you know, he's obviously talking a lot about his headspace and sort of process. And I think he's quite endearing to a lot of people because he's got this Twitter personality of like being pretty happy, go lucky, but also wearing his heart on his sleeve when things do go, you know, slightly awry. And I think there's just been some good coverage over the last few months or so, maybe even a bit longer than that, about how he's probably a little less hard on himself and backs himself a bit more. And there's a few nice remarks that back that up, and it's great when you see that kind of come together. And a guy who's had a pretty poor major record until fairly recently, all of a sudden seems like a bit of a contender.
Few other ones. Fleetwood got a sneaky third.
Yeah,
he really snuck up, didn't he?
Without Finau on my bag as well.
Yeah. What's the story there, Sammy? Do you know what's happened there?
He's just poorly. I think he's been poorly for a few weeks. I think he's okay. Funnily enough, I was with someone who knew him today. Not an official statement on this, but I think he's okay. I think it's he just suffers with something on and off, and I'm sure he'll be back on the bag soon. So, considering like what a key part of that partnership Finau is for Fleetwood, he's gone out and got it done without him. You'd hate to be laid up watching that, wouldn't you? You were in Finis, I tell you. That would just be absolutely heartbreaking.
thinking...
I want him to do well, but...
I don't want him to win.
You want him to win, but you really don't want him to win at the same time. Like, I mean, I really want him to go close, but just please someone beat him. So, I mean, that was an incredible performance. What about, there must have been some blockbuster, there were some blockbuster bits of content in the week as well, but we've all got to have our little favourite picks here. I mean, like, I just want to get the jump on this. And I thought Bryson holding the Amen Corner sign over his shoulder.
The lumberjack.
It was so good how Twitter
I saw the picture. How did this come about?
So it was when, wasn't he, was this when he was out, he drove miles right on the 12 and he had to play out to 14, I think.
Okay.
He was just like, he was so far out. And then at some point he was like, he'd got this sign over his back. And the shots, I mean, it took all of about, I think, half an hour before when someone started to stitch them together on Twitter with pictures of like Christ on the cross and all this sort of stuff and people dragging the cross through the streets of Jerusalem and stuff. It was mental. It was an absolute blockbuster bit of content. I don't know how much of that is just affected by Bryson because he's thinking, Christ, I really need to pedal and kind of get people back on board. So he kind of doubles down on the wackiness because it is quite good fun all of a sudden.
He's like an influencer now. It's like a influencer, half like world-class golfer, and it's a really weird blend. And I get that there, Sammy, like it feels as if it's kind of intentional, which is remarkable when you're leading the most prestigious or certainly the most watched golf event other than the Ryder Cup. To just but think if he had the presence of mind going, to pick it up.
Part of the stuff of him going to live is all this stuff that if you remember Phil was talking about NFTing swings and all that stuff. But it's about that they've got far more control over their own image rights and they can basically do whatever they want to do with their online platforms or whatever. Like DeChambeau is really, really big on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, he's got, I'm trying to find the exact number now, but it's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of 541,000 subscribers on YouTube. So he makes a lot of money anyway, but he will make a lot of money off that as well.
So yeah, he's crank driver. He was playing a long drive driver.
He's doing long drive videos with Paige Spirinac and Rick Shields and Grant Horvath.
Did you see he played with irons this week that were only legalized on Wednesday, and the irons have got Roland Bulge?
Yeah, I thought that was bizarre.
What? I heard he was playing this crank driver. So he's got rolling ball giants. Like,
yeah,
sort of like
they were only legalized on like Wednesday or Tuesday this week.
Brilliant. I mean, how anyone, remarkable guy goes out and plays well. So that was a blockbuster bit of content. What else have we got?
I think I've got to, you know, just put it out there. Zach Johnson.
Yes.
His expletive on the 12th. I just thought that was so bizarre. You know, obviously there's been quite a bit on Scheffler as like having amazing composure and part of that being tied to his faith. And he's quite, you know, passionate about that. And Zach Johnson, historically, he's been the same, actually.
Yes,
but
exactly.
I don't know
yes.
what was going through his head on the 12th green. You know, part of me thinks that he must have taken a lot of flack for A, just the US performance in the Ryder Cup generally, but B, how that was portrayed in the Netflix coverage as well. He must just be getting heckled a lot. He obviously flipped out at the Phoenix Open, didn't he, earlier in the year? And just of all places. But what was more comical, I thought, than the actual point where he told the patrons to fuck off when they jeered him making a triple or double bogey, was he then tried to deny it in the press conference after. And it was like, there were memes.
He said, don't get me wrong, if it was on film, obviously I'm not going to deny it. It's like, so what you're saying there is, if it wasn't on film, you would quite happily deny it. But if it's on film, obviously I'm not going to deny it. But I didn't, I was swearing at myself. And then you go back and you look at the footage and you can hear them heckling him. And he turns around from the pin and shouts back up, fuck off. And you think, oh, it's more how he handles it. Like, you'd be so much better to just be like, yeah, do you know what? A couple of times this year, it's just got the better of me. I really struggled with the way I was kind of, the reactions I'm getting on the course since the Ryder Cup. I really tried my best. People might not think the performance was up to scratch, but it's really hurtful because I put a lot into it. And people would be like, oh, I'm actually on board with Zach Johnson now. Instead, he's kind of going into this sort of like, he keeps going into these like weird outbursts and things. And it's like, if you can't keep it together, just don't go and play in these tournaments, dude. Like, just give yourself a break, go on holiday, you know, just take yourself out of the situation.
Yeah it's bizarre. It's like, what are you referring to? Sorry, excuse me? And then there's like these memes where people are saying, you know, oh, what happens when your wife catches you on the way back in with your golf clubs, having snuck out on a Saturday morning. And it's like a parody of that. And it's, wild. I thought it was absolutely wild. The other one as well, I was a personal favorite, was Jason Day in the Melbourne Golf.
Robin, where do you stand on this?
I think they made him
change his jumper, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, they asked him to. And I've got to say, I'm massively in favor of the way Augusta runs
but
the event.
Heinous jumpers in the past at Augusta National, notably by Nick Faldo, but there are also some other.
No, that's different.
Why is it different? There are some,
because Faldo, you're taking shots at Faldo with like wacky patterns and the Pringle jumpers and all that sort of stuff. Fine. Why do you think Jason Day specifically was asked to change his top?
Well, the font, there was the wording on it. It was a Melbourne Golf Championship and he was playing a completely different event.
Exactly.
Not the style
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, it's the wording on it, not the.
Is that
style.
Why? Is that the,
I mean,
the,
we can leave. Yeah, you can leave aside the fact that Jason Day has the least aspirational sponsors of anyone playing professional sport right now. I mean, Melbourne and DeWalt having like a power tool company as your sponsors. Just
I'm going to push back. Danny Willett's got Trendy Golf, which I think is
that's not up great. There. But DeWalt, I do think the big black and yellow font of DeWalt is particularly
great. Power tools, though, they are great.
We'd be up for a power tool sponsor on this podcast. It's a great gap. We're shilling.
I've still got more to do in the office. I mean, power tools.
Obviously, I've offended DeWalt, but if Bosch or Makita want to, you know, chuck anything our way, we could really entertain.
We've now got the biscuit sponsor, Bruce. Did you notice we've now got a biscuit sponsor?
Who's the bit
in a recent pod? So, do you remember Jim who came to our spring meeting last year? St. Andrew's Biscuit Bakery. He's now supplying us with like it's an absolutely absurd amount of biscuits into the office. So, we now have some St. Andrew's Biscuit Company available online. He doesn't start it out either, does he, Jason Day? He's so boring and it's just like the guy looks like an idiot.
Oh, don't say he looks like an idiot, he looks like just like me.
No. but like, it, you know, everything around the shot is so anti the brand of those clothes. Now, obviously, we're good pals with the Sounder guys, and they do some slacks that are, you know, a little bit more generous, and they're not too fitted or whatever. But I think they're an altogether proposition with the stuff that they were putting out, Malbon. It's also try hard. It's also weird. I think we're probably going to see a ton more of this in professional golf, like loads more. I think this is the tip of the iceberg, what we're seeing now.
To answer your question, Mills, I think, yeah, actually, I was totally in favour of what Augusta said, which was asking him politely to remove it. And I think Augusta just nailed it on so many levels. The other thing that dawned on me all of a sudden, I know it's been a rule for a while, it's like no cell phones or no mobile phones, I should say. Nice. How nice is it to just see people like lining the gallery watching golf rather than actually just like getting their phones out and filming it? Like, I just think they nail it on so many different levels. Ooh. And
I heard a mashed potato. Do you think he got ejected?
You heard a mashed potato?
I did, yeah.
You'd like to think so.
I wondered after I heard it whether he, you know, had a black bag put over his head or something.
I mean, they do police it. I think Chris Como nearly got kicked out for posting some stuff online of stuff from his phone on around the grounds. Like, they really do police it. They don't muck around.
No. Apparently, well, Cara Banks was on the podcast before. So if they see this, the outline of a phone in your pocket, you know, they'll rugby tackle you.
Mm. Well, she didn't. Come on. She didn't say that.
It was something like that.
Let's never let the truth get in the way of a good story on this podcast. I mean, there were some other tidbits in here, weren't there? Greg Norman having to go into the third, you know, the second-hand market to get all the tickets to go and see his players. I thought that was pretty outrageous.
That was bizarre. Yeah.
The Neil Shipley's presser at the end where that guy asked him about the notes.
Yeah. What was that? And he like looks over to his PR guy, like 90 degrees, like, should I say anything? And
what's going on?
Someone did a clip out of Zoolander where he's like got the sort of finger over his lips.
No, it's Happy Gilmore. It's Happy Gilmore, isn't it?
I saw one with I saw one with Ben Stiller.
No, it's Happy Gilmore with Ben Stiller going like that.
It's Ben Stiller with Happy Gilmore's mum, isn't it? Just giving that.
Yeah.
The finger. Is Ben Stiller in Happy Gilmore?
Yeah, he's the owner of the crazy nursing home.
I think he works there. Let's not give this guy more of a promotion than he deserves.
Yeah, maybe just works there.
I think he works in the nursing home. But yeah, he's like, yeah, you're in my house now, Grandma. That's right. Well, you're a generation younger, Bruce. I don't expect you to be as clued up on this as me and Tom.
Thank you.
Can we have a moment for Adam Scott?
In silence, or? He's not dead, is he?
90th major appearance on the bounce. Not missed a single one. When that streak started, Ashke Bhatia wasn't even born.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
That is pretty good. I'm going to just show my ignorance here. How did he finish up, Scott? I mean,
he was 22nd. Well, Bhatia or Scott?
No, Scott.
Yeah, but tied for 22nd.
I didn't see him hit
a
shot.
Longevity.
I didn't see him hit a shot.
No.
And I don't know if you guys found this, but I found like the coverage was great in the top groups. But there were plenty of people. Like, I didn't really see much of Fleetwood until the final day. Cameron Smith finished pretty strongly.
He was on the blacklist, wasn't he?
Four shots. Huh?
He was in the blacklist. He was 3 under through two, and you hadn't seen him hit a shot on the last final round.
It was so weird. I do have to say, I think, you know, probably no secret, I'm not the biggest fan of Liv, but the logos the Liv guys wear are heinous, aren't they?
Do you think they're forced to wear them?
I don't know, but I wish they had a say in the actual logos that they would represent.
John Rahm does. I mean, he owns the
awful, isn't it?
Franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we really should have registered a cease and desist on the Cleek's logo way back. It's like the number
I'm
of people.
I'm pretty sure that word was around before Cookie Jar Golf, so I don't know what.
No, it's not the word. It's like it's the. I don't know. I think it's a bit of a. I think Cleek's logo. Someone's looked at ours and gone, yeah, we can probably do something close enough to that. they are heinous, though, aren't they? And it's just you can sort of see them a mile off, really. I don't know, but you know. The more and more this is going on, it's feeling like less and less of a thing through the general commentary. And the players seem to, I mean, the guys that are playing these events seem to turn up and I think seem to perform pretty well. And with the exception of,
Yeah, I'm going to echo Bruce's sentiments, though. I thought that you saw six players a lot, and then nothing of anybody else. Pretty much for the whole week.
Didn't miss a shot of homers. I mean, he literally got everything.
Or Scheffler, or for the first two rounds, he didn't miss a shot of Rory. Tiger, the bloody hell, you see if a shot was warm up, it's like, you know.
Cantlay. I mean, Cantlay was sort of in the mix for a couple of rounds, and then...
There'd be loads of people in the top 10 that didn't, you never bizarre. Saw.
Yeah.
Cam Young.
Where'd you stand on Morikawa?
In terms of...
Well, not physically. Like, where do you actually stand on him? Like, in terms of, like, you know, general sort of outlook on Morikawa. My reason for asking this question, I find him incredibly tough to root for.
Do you?
Oh, okay. I like Morikawa.
Yeah. Well, tell us a bit more, Sammy. What's the issue?
I don't know. Just very steely pace, doesn't it? Yeah, you don't really get a huge amount back from him. He's just very steely pace, and you're sort of thinking, I don't know, you're watching that thinking, oh, the wrong outcome here is for Morikawa to win this, like in some way. And so I'm sort of thinking the top four names here, like Homer, can totally get on board with that. Oberg, mental if he wins this. Scheffler, I'd like to see him win it. Morikawa would just feel like such a backdoor, horrible win that I'd just be like, oh, why did that have to happen? I don't even know why in my head. I just, sometimes it's hard to, you know, you just have those like things, don't you?
I kind of like the idea that if he'd have won, you know, he is another one in the trio of majors that, is, you know, is one away from a Grand Slam. I kind of like that.
Hmm?
I don't know. I'm quite fond of Morikawa. You know, I wouldn't mind taking him home to meet my parents. I think seems like quite a nice bloke.
Well, steady on. I think quite interesting, I caught a bit on the Masters radio, was that I think he'd said that he basically struggled with his game and really lost confidence in his swing for, like, I don't know, since the start of 22 or mid 22.
Apparently trying to draw the ball. That was his problem.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a bit of that in there, but I mean, he can't really hit his repeatable fade now in the same way. That miss into 11, like, very uncharacteristic for a fader of the ball.
Yeah.
Miss it in the water left. But his putting looked better. Putting definitely looked better. I can't say I share the same contempt for him that you do.
It's not contempt. I can't root for him. It's not contempt. I don't wish ill on the guy, just to be hyper clear on this point. I just don't root for him. I don't find him particularly exciting. I wish him well in all of his endeavours, but I just don't root for him to win a ton of professional events.
Yeah, I get
Can
that.
We jump into a few quick course takes? I'm gonna kick it off. Third, the more and more I watch that pin on the Sunday, the third pin is absolutely evil. Like that hole looks so tough, actually, when you put it up on the Sunday, I always find.
Yeah, it looks like there's just such a severe runoff every side, and it's like a little weird triangular-shaped green with weird little nodules to it. Fowler made an interesting remark on the coverage generally, actually. He said that they kind of, whenever you go back, and they just change something slightly, and he says it's basically unrecognisable, the contours of certain greens to when he won in the 90s. They're just constantly changing it and tinkering with it. And there's so many slopes. Yeah.
Like six, they pulled that ledge, the top right ledge, for example. They were like, yeah, that all came out several yards this year. And you're like, okay, I didn't know that was a thing that we did. I really enjoyed your pod last week, boys, the two-parter, like exceptional Masters content, actually, that exceptional stuff. Eighth green, like, Cliff Roberts' work. You still see shades of like how that would have looked on the eighth green, I think it was, when you talk about it.
I had I had dinner with Joe McDonald on Saturday, and he was saying that eighth green stayed like that for like 20 years. It wasn't like, you know, a flash in the pan. It was up until just before he died. Like he fought tooth and nail to keep that green how he changed it, and he relented just before he died. But it was absolutely atrocious up until the late 70s.
He'd have been such a bad chairman of Greens, Cliff Roberts, at many other golf club. You can imagine, just absolutely had his way with everything. Yeah. The other thing on the course takes that just stuck with me is, I think so much of the time you watch the Masters and you see so much of the par fives and you see so much of the scoring holes or the disaster holes, which invariably are things like Amen Corner and the par fives. And I had forgotten, to be honest, quite how long some of those holes that they're playing are.
Yeah, like, certainly some of the ones in the front.
That's stating the bleeding obvious, I know, but some of them are monstrous. I think
the fifth is a monster.
Yeah, and the green's just not accommodating at all. Like, you watched that shot Scheffler hit into the fifth yesterday. Just of a different order.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. 11. I mean, 11 is like 5'10" with water on the left, and you see they're
longer than the Fortnite.
They're hitting in shots from like 200, 220 in that range, off like a slightly sketchy side hill downhill lie with water on the left and the wind off the right. It's like enough to make you sick, isn't it?
It's very strange, isn't it, that, you know, in the era of width and angles, Augusta is still held up and lauded as a masterpiece when there's certainly no width and there's not really any angles. I mean, you do need to be on the right side of the fairways. I'll probably take that last comment back a little bit. But I think it's so narrow.
That's the definition of angles. It's wide. Yeah, no, I think it's fair to say it's huge. Width. Yeah, it's wide.
I think the driving corridors look tiny.
The 18th looks claustrophobic. But I think 11
is our conversation as well. 11 is to spark my thoughts on this. 11 looks about two paces wide.
No, 11, there's quite a bit down. I mean, look, stating the bleeding obvious here, I'd quite like to play Augusta from the members' tees and see what it's like to drive into. I think that applies to every golfer on the planet. I would be quite curious to see where the ball ends up, though. And I they're playing into probably the same areas that you and I would. And those fairways are really generous. They're very wide. If you look at 11, like, you know, yesterday, for example, Scheffler pulled that tee shot. Morikawa pushed his tee shot. They were miles apart from each other, where they're hitting their approach shots. Like, I think I would definitely push back on that. Yes, if you find the trees, which is really your only trouble, because there's not really much rough to speak of. And the trees do come into play on a couple. Like, there's a two-sided miss on 7, I think. 7's a tight drive. That looks nails. 18's a tight channel to drive through. 18's a tight channel to drive through, but it opens up. I think they're generally accommodating.
9 as well, yeah. Really quite wide, but if you're coming in from that right side, going up the green, that is an easier angle.
So I'm still going to have to do something about that walkway on 9. Did you see all that?
Yeah,
like where they kept that, the patrons across the walkway, and everyone was just bombing it into their feet. Because I don't know, they were hitting like 380 yard drives down there.
Yeah, and Rory was always the last one to play in, wasn't it? I mean, he just dumped it down there.
Yeah.
Anything else before we tie a ribbon on this year's Masters, gentlemen?
No.
Let's ask a question to finish off. Did you think it was an all world Masters this year?
Well, I don't know if there's ever a Masters that isn't packed with drama and exciting. Just going to chuck that out there. I can remember watching the Masters in, and I'm really sorry to bag him because we've already bagged him once on this podcast. In 2007, and been a little bit disappointed that Zach Johnson won and Tiger finished runner up. That was a little bit anticlimactic. Sorry, it wasn't 2007. It was 2007. I might be getting it mixed up with Wimbledon, but anyway, point remains. That was a little bit disappointing, but I can't really say any Masters that I've watched has been anything but captivating, gripping TV other than that one. It's just that it always seems to throw up some kind of interesting storyline, whether it's Adam Scott facing down Cabrera or, you know, Rahm and Koepka last year, Scheffler trying to, you know, meet expectations and carry on playing form this year. I think there's always something exciting about it. And I think that's generated by the mystique of the event and the fact that it goes back to the same place every year and there's this aura about it.
It basically signifies the start of the golfing season as well, doesn't it, for us?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to build on it, like, yeah, it would have been a more entertaining product to watch had it been as close as it was at the turn, right through to 14 or 15. Like, that would have been absolutely palpable because the quality of the players, the storylines, the quality of golf that was being played was unreal. It just so happened that a few things transpired where they just got shoved apart a little bit sooner on the back nine. But I, yeah, in some ways, it's almost like it's a bit like Christmas, isn't it? You know, it's almost like the lead up to it is a little bit better than the real thing in some ways. Like because I was away for a few days, Wales, had something on Thursday. You just miss quite a bit of the golf. It's quite hard to actually be completely committed to not moving off the sofa for 4 days and remain married in the whole process. So it's very tough to see all of it, but it's almost like the build up is the exciting part in some ways. But I think the raw ingredients, like what a winner, you know, yeah, good event, like really good.
Just a final one for you, Sam. How do you feel about lobbing money on Harman?
Yeah, I mean, hindsight, that was a weak bet. I felt like he was underpriced. I think he was offering good value at 95-1. I was staggered. You've confessed to having a bet on this podcast for a man who's so outspoken against gambling, but you've picked up some cash on Homer there. That was a much more sensible bet.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
We probably should actually just finish with maybe a parting note on just some of the stinking performances of Thursday and Friday. I mean, Brian Hartman could be up there with all of them. Going out in 34 or 35.
He's now back in my bad books.
Did he come home in 47?
No.
I think he came home in 47 or something. I think he was like 35, 47 for an 82.
There were some big miscuts though, weren't there?
Justin Thomas, second year running, where he's been in prime position to make the cut. Okay, he's not close to the lead, but just for want of a better expression, he has just pooed the bed. Like coming in on Friday, did he finish double bogey, double double?
I always feel like he tempts fate though, because on social media before the event, he always puts up his outfit for 4 days.
Yeah,
just put up for 2 days and then release the second 2 days on Saturday. You know.
You got two Instagram posts there, double the likes.
Exactly. And it's great for the stats.
Spieth. I had Spieth in a little sweepstake. I thought he was a pretty safe bet. I don't know if you guys noticed the sort of proliferation of Masters sweepstakes. It seems like of all the events that captures like the non-golfer's imagination, the Masters is one of them. And there's like office sweepstakes and all sorts going around. And yeah, I had Spieth in one of those. Because he was in the sort of slightly lower ranked category of 20 to whatever it was in the world. And I thought he always does well as Augusta. He'll go on a Sunday charge. The guy goes and takes 9 on the 15th. And I was just like, come on.
It's terribly Jordan Spieth though, isn't it?
It's devastating. Yeah.
Hovland, another poor, you know, 71, 81, I think he was.
That was wild. He was 3 or 4 under after 9 holes on Thursday. And just, again, crazy stuff. And he's called out the RBC Heritage as well, actually, which probably says something about his state of mind.
Really? And big Stuart Hagerstadt, you know, it's one for, you know, he's a big hero of this podcast. I'm so astounded this is only his second appearance.
No, it's not, is it?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's his third.
2017, 2022. But because he's won so many AMs and stuff. I just thought he would have been, you know, I don't know. I just think he's a perennial winner in the amateur scene and would have played more in the Masters. I don't know.
How did he fare?
Missed the cut.
So 7+.
It's quite tough to make the cut in that, isn't it, really, to be fair? It's probably a tall order. When that Neil Shipley's played bloody good, isn't he?
Right. So I think it was supposed to be half an hour and it was close to an hour. So sorry, Bruce, but thank you very much for joining us. And hopefully that's the start of the golfing season. The weather will turn here in the UK. We play a bit more golf. We're excited about the upcoming season. And I think that is it, chaps. So until next time.
Adios.
Adios. Watch this.